Hello, I'm Chuck Shaden. We're celebrating old-time radio in the 20th century on Those Were the Days, classic broadcast on Classical 97, Saturdays from 1 to 5 here on WNIB in Chicago. Right now, we're going to take you back to 1971. Now, in terms of what we do, 1971 isn't so far back, right? But it is quite a ways since we met Mel Blanc for the very first time. He was appearing on Kennedy and Company. Remember Bob Kennedy's fine morning show on Channel 7 in Chicago? Bob Kennedy was a listener of ours and a friend of old-time radio, and whenever he had a guest in his studio that seemed to have a radio background, he'd give me a call and say, Chuck, come on down. Maybe you ought to bring your tape recorder. You can interview, and then he'd say the name. And wow, when he said Mel Blanc, I was downtown even before I could hang up that telephone. So after Mel Blanc had appeared on Bob Kennedy's program, then we went into Bob's, actually Bob's little office there on April the 26th of 1971 and sat down and talked about his career. So why don't you come back with me to April 26th of 1971. We're at the Channel 7 studios in Chicago.
It's a great treat for us to be able to use our microphones today to transmit a voice which belongs to one of the most talented voice creators of all time. Mel Blanc, welcome to Those Were the Days.
Gee, thank you very much, Chuck.
Mel, I understand you're in town for the Kennedy & Company TV show.
Yeah, that's right. You don't mind if I talk to my straight voice?
No, do your straight voice, that's for sure.
Yeah, I came in for Bob from Los Angeles, and I did his show.
Uh-huh.
And he and Jenny are very nice people.
They're great folks. Mm-hmm. They're great folks. And they said, hey, Chuck, why don't you come on down and talk to Mel Blanc after he's through with us and share you with our listeners on Saturday afternoon.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you did.
You, of course, created the voices of Porky Pig, Bugs Bunny, Sylvester, Tweety Pie.
Daffy Duck. Yeah. Yosemite Sam, Pepe Le Pew.
Don't go. Pepe Le Pew. Now he was the first X-rated cartoon character of all time, wasn't he? He was pretty sexy.
He chased the pussycat and catch them and kiss them.
didn't he used to say, I can't do it. Hello, baby. Hello. How did he?
Hello, baby.
Yeah. Oh boy!
Gee, I didn't know he was X-rated.
Well, maybe, you know. How long has Pepe Le Pew been around?
Oh, quite a number of years. You know, incidentally, he does get fan mail from ladies, yeah. Uh-huh. They don't address it to me, just a Pepe Le Pew. And some terrific letters come to him.
Where would a fan letter to you go?
To Warner Brothers.
Just Warner Brothers,
yeah.
Burbank?
Yeah.
Burbank,
that's
California.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh,
how long... Well, you're still, of course, associated with Warner Brothers. You're still making cartoons,
doing great
voice tracks.
Mm-hmm.
When did you get your first job with Warner Brothers?
In 1937 was the job of a drunken bull. I had tried to get in there for a year and a half. And the guy always said, no, I'm sorry, we got all the voices we need. And I kept going back, and he said, no, we still have all the voices we need. And I don't like to say this, but the guy died. So I went to the next man in charge. Told him I wanted to audition for him. He said, well, swell, let's hear what you've got. So I auditioned for him, and he said, would you mind doing it again for the directors? So I did it for the directors, and they got a big kick out of it. And one of the directors said, can you do a drunken bull? I said, oh, I'd be very happy to do a drunken bull. So he said, swell, what are you doing next Tuesday? And I said, I think I can make it. I wasn't doing a darn thing. But I made that Tuesday, on the Tuesday with a drunken bull, and this director happened to be Tashland, who is now a big motion picture director.
Mm-hmm.
He was just directing the cartoons.
And that was your start in 37.
That's right. From there I did Porky Pig, which was the next voice. And then from there I went to Bugs Bunny, who came in 1938. They wanted a tough little character.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe either someone that came from Brooklyn or the Bronx, which was the toughest talking area in the world, and I thought, why don't I put them both together?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got the voice for Bugs Bunny, Doc.
Well, which came first, the Bugs Bunny cartoon in the films or the comic strips?
Films.
The film was first.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, when you would create a voice like Bugs Bunny, by the way, did you create the name? Did you give Bugs his name too?
Yes, he was. They were going to call him Happy Rabbit or something like that, and I took it from the name from the man who actually drew the first character.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Bugs Hardaway. He has since passed away. But I thought, gee, why don't they call it Bugs Bunny? Because it was his bunny,
uh-huh.
And the name was fit the kind of character he was. He was a little buggy. So Schlesinger said, yeah, that's a good idea. So they called him Bugs Bunny.
I can't imagine us all these years enjoying Happy Rabbit the same way.
Yeah, that's right.
I can remember in the show as a kid, we'd wait for the cartoon, and there's always a round of cheers and applause when the cartoon would come on. But I think the Bugs Bunny cartoons always started just a little differently. They had Bugs sitting on top of his name or something like that, pulling the shade or something. But he would be on twice the cheers, twice the screams, and the applause for Bugs Bunny.
There were some great artists, some great animators that worked for Warner Brothers. You know, most people have me confused with having worked for Disney. Disney was a very good friend of mine. But I have been with Warner Brothers since 1937, although I worked with Disney prior to that time, and with Walter Lantz, who I created the voice for Woody Woodpecker. His wife is now doing that.
But you were the original Woody Woodpecker.
Yeah, I did that when I was in high school, years ago, and I laughed down the hall to see if I could hear the echo, and I ran down the hall to hear it, and I bumped into the principal. Almost got kicked out. He said, "What were you doing?" I said, "We're laughing." He says, "I know, but what were you doing?" So I had almost got kicked out of the school for doing it. But Woody Woodpecker's laugh was like this.
Great, great. You brought your own audience today.
Oh.
Your audience in the studio here with all the laughs and the different voices. It's great. So, you know, during the war in the 40s, Warner Brothers had some really terrific cartoons, but they've always had great cartoons. I'm not singling out any special period, but I can remember, and we see so many of them on television today, where they employed in their storyline Hollywood stars and personalities. They drew them, you know.
Yes.
Humphrey Bogart and all of these things, and they would be going to the... they wouldn't call it the Macombo, they'd call it something else.
Yeah.
It would be a rabbit hole and Bugs would go there. When the stars were on the films, or when they used the star characterizations, did you do those voices?
No. Sometimes they use the actual stars. If
they did.
If they worked for Warner Brothers, they would use the actual stars. Sometimes they had impersonators. And as I say, or have said, I don't like to impersonate people. If I can't create a character, then I don't feel that it's my voice, that it doesn't belong to me. I don't like to steal from anybody. In other words, if I did a Cary Grant and didn't say who it was and just did it in a cartoon, I don't think that would be right because, after all, it's his voice and he should get the money from it because it's his property.
But there's isn't there a law in the United States that says anyone can imitate anybody without having to... being responsible to the person they're imitating.
That's right. They can in this country. If they couldn't, if they had a law like France, which is called Le Pledge, I think, taken from plagiarism, if they had a law like that, I'd become a very wealthy man by suing people who steal my voice.
Well, you know, they're doing that a lot today, though. I know on a lot of the television series, the cartoon series on TV, they give no credit whatsoever to of the characters, but, gee, you'll hear someone imitating Lionel Barrymore or... Any of the voices of personalities that maybe we remember.
Mm-hmm. They should. It's all right to give an imitation, providing you say who it was taken from. Mm-hmm. I think that's all right, because you're giving the man credit. Although not cash, you're giving him credit for having created the voice.
Well, you are a creator of voices rather than an impersonator.
That's right.
Right. And you have created so many. Which was the toughest voice you ever created?
I think Yosemite Sam. He's pretty loud and raucous. And he talks with a very heavy voice. He's only 2 feet tall, but that's why Yosemite talks. And after I do that for an hour or two, I get a little hoarse.
What was the easiest voice you ever did?
I think Bugs Bunny's about the easiest, Doc. Because he's a little character that has a lot of fun.
That's so interesting. The most famous... Would you say Bugs is the most famous characterization you have?
Yes, Bugs is by far the most famous. He's being caught up with by Tweety and Sylvester, though.
Is he?
Uh-huh. Ooh, I thought I saw a pretty cat.
Suffering fuckatash. Bet he saw a pretty cat.
And... I can't keep my composure here. What was the... Well, what about... Now, I know these cartoons run all over the world, but what about the voice tracks in French and Spanish and so forth all around the world?
Those are done by someone who impersonates me in French or Spanish, whatever it might be. They take my voice and... use the same inflections I use in the characteristics of the rabbit, for example.
Oui, monsieur. That's the way they talk for the rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied with their imitation of you?
No, some of them are pretty bad.
Are they done here in the States, in Hollywood, California?
Some of them, no, not that I know of. Some of them are done in France, actually.
Mm-hmm.
By people who speak both English. They understand what is being said, and then they translate it.
Did you create, do you create voices for the pictures that we see on the screen before or after the picture is drawn?
They always show me the picture first.
Mm-hmm.
They draw a picture of, a still picture of the character they're going to use. They tell me what he's going to do in the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And from what they tell me and the looks of the character, I have to create a voice for this particular character,
mm-hmm.
and stay in the mood, have the voice fit the mood that he's going to do in the picture itself. And they told me Porky was a timid little guy.
So we went out to a pig farm, and we wallowed around with him, and they found out if the pig could talk, he'd talk with a grunt. So that's how Porky talks with a grunt.
Well, whose idea? Now you got me doing it. Whose idea was the stutter on Porky? Was that your idea?
Yes, it was more or less of an oink 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 oink. If you hear hear a pig, I mean oink 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 oink. That's all it is, folks. It's actually an oink, not. I don't think anybody stutters that badly.
No, but I remember reading Porky Pig comic books, and I it take me three times as long to get through a Porky Pig book because I was really something. Excuse me. Did you do any full length cartoons?
I did a couple of them, yes,
mm-hmm.
And they weren't with Bugs or any of the Warner Brother cartoons.
They weren't Warner cartoons?
No, I did a couple for Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, yes.
Where I did Barney Rubble on the Flintstones. And a couple of other cartoons. There's one with... that's The Wizard of Oz or something like that. I can't think of what it was. But and then two or three others. One I did with Walt Disney before 1937. And that was called... Pinocchio.
Were you on
I was in Pinocchio, and I had worked for 16 days doing the voice that had the hiccup in it, like the Strunken Bull I told you about.
Yes, yeah.
And after working 16 days, they changed and had a different character take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
But they still used this cat, and of the 16 days' work, they used one hiccup. Out of the whole thing. So I was in that picture.
So there you were there, but you only hicked once.
Well paid for one hiccup.
Well, that's all right. Did you have you ever appeared on the motion picture screen as an actor, as Mel Blanc, or as Mel Blanc acting?
Just in a couple of pictures. One was with Red Skelton.
Uh-huh.
And that was, let's see, I don't even remember the name of it. It was the song, Oh Baby It's Cold Outside, and Esther Williams was
there. Yeah, it had to be. From
Ricardo Montalban, yeah.
Yeah. Easy to Wed, yeah. Or... Bathing Beauty. Maybe it was Bathing Beauty.
No. Isn't that terrible? I can't even think of the name.
We'll do a Red Skelton.
We've done so many years ago.
Yeah, we'll do a Skelton retrospective one of these days.
Then I did one or two others, just short little parts. But the reason for my not having done motion pictures is the fact that it takes so long. And I wouldn't have the time for it. I had to turn down many motion picture jobs.
How long would it take from start to finish to produce a cartoon? I guess they were seven minutes or so, aren't they?
Seven and a half minutes. Well, Warner Brothers use full animation. Mm-hmm. And the other cartoon studios, most of the others, except Lance, use limited animation. And limited animation can be done in 1/8 the time. But an actual cartoon would take about 9 months to complete in full animation.
Now, the difference between the two is what?
Well, in full animation, you have a picture for each movement, whereas in limited animation, you have the character standing still, maybe just his eyes blinking or his mouth moving. And they cut down, about 70%.
Yeah. How much time would it take you to do your part in one of these films?
It used to take me between a day and a half to do the voices, which are done first. And that's been cut down to 1 hour or less, because I've become experienced all this time.
I suppose you can get a script then today, right?
I get a script and a what they call a board, storyboard, showing what this character is going to do all through the picture, to give me an idea of how to use my voice.
Mm-hmm. And then do you ever go back along the line and they say, well, we need another line or something?
Oh, yes. I've called back many times to do additional lines.
Uh-huh. We, on our Those Were the Days program, fondly remember Mel Blanc's great radio days. And, of course, you're with us today on television all the time. Barney Rubble and we see Jack. You were on Jack Benny's
special
not too long ago, weren't
That's
you?
That's right.
Well, we remember the great characterizations on the Jack Benny program. You were Jack's violin teacher.
I asked him to please, can I have my money? Take the ball and chain off my foot so I may go home. The lesson is over. What a tune your fiddle brings on. How I wish it had no strings on.
How about Polly the Parrot?
Well, that was actually done. They wanted a parrot to look like he was talking, and they asked me if I could do a parrot. I said, parrot,
better than cheapskate.
All right, now, weren't you the voice over the PA system at the railroad station?
Yes, that sounded like train leaving on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga.
Those are actually the names of towns.
And they were made famous by Mel Blanc on the Jack Benny Show. Well, now, what about the Maxwell? How did that start? That wasn't the voice. That was a sound. How did that come about?
Well, you know, it was at a rehearsal. It's actually a true story. And I saw that the turntable that actually plays these sounds wasn't plugged into the electrical socket. And I know Jack likes to have his show the way it's going to be on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have time to tell the sound man to plug the thing in, so when it came to that spot, I did it verbally or orally, and it sounded like this.
Oh, you got a hiccup back in there. Oh, boy. How about, now, let's see, there was a Spanish character on the Benny Show, and was his name Pedro?
No.
Or there was no name? Or was
he had a name.
Oh, his name. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, let's do it. Let's do it.
You remember his name?
I remember, sure. I understand you're in town to visit Bob and Bob Kennedy and Jenny Krim on Kennedy and Company, and that you're going to talk a little bit for us on Those Were the Days. Is that right?
Si.
What is your name?
Si.
Si?
Si.
Do you have a sister?
Si.
What's her name?
Sue?
She. Oh, Mel Blanc.
You know, there's only about 10 words of dialogue in the whole thing, but it's become one of Jack's popular things.
How many times do you think you've done that bit?
Well, I started in radio. That was in, about 1948, 49.
Is that when you first started working with Jack Benny?
No, I started working with Jack in 1940.
In 40?
Yeah, he had heard me in the cartoons.
Uh-huh.
I started there in 37, but he heard me do these voices in the cartoons. So he called me one day and asked me if I could do the growl for Carmichael the Bear. This is maybe before your time. And he had a bear that was down the cellar. And finally did away with a gas man. But he said, can you do the growl of a bear? I said, sure. He said, great. And he used that for about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
That's all I did was a growl of the bear. Finally, I said to him, you know, Mr. Benny, I can also speak. Well, he fell on the floor and pounded it, as he usually does. And he said, good, I'll have the writers write something in for you. And that's when I started with him.
Okay.
Doing the voices for him.
And which was, you remember, which was the first voice, aside from the Carmichael the Bear?
I think one of the first voices was as a salesman around Christmas time, where he keeps changing the package. You know, he buys a belt, maybe, and he says, no, that... says, I want some initials put on it, and I'd have to unwrap the package and wrap it again.
Oh, yeah.
Then so on, all
that's
of it.
With the cufflinks for Don
yes,
Wilson. And
yeah,
he's keeping,
that's right.
Yeah, we did that on our show one time.
Oh,
it was
so?
Great, yeah. Oh, that was good. Well, now, let's see. You were on many, many other radio shows, and one of them was, I'll never forget, Saturday Nights and Judy Canova.
Yeah.
And there was, that was Pedro.
See, that was Pedro. Pardon me for talking in your face, Senorita.
And I did that along with many other voices with her. One was this spraying thing that I did for Sylvester later in Warner Cartoons. He's the one that spoke about spray, you know, and got everybody sopping wet.
And my glasses are all sprayed now, too.
And I did that with Al Jolson also. On the Al Jolson show.
Now, what was this? After the comeback or before? Was it on the Shell Chateau or was it on the
I can't remember who the. Oh, it was sponsored by a soap company.
Life Boy.
Yes, Life Boy and another one, and Martha Ray was on the show at the time. And this. I did that and several other characters with him.
You were also involved, I think, with. The big first class network comedy shows mostly from Hollywood, I guess, because you were based out there with the Warner Brothers. Jack Carson, remember a character by the name of Hubert Peabody?
Yes.
How did that character sound?
Well, I think he was just a little timid guy. I can't remember exactly what he did, but I think he was a little timid fellow.
And incidentally, I just saw. I didn't even know he was in town, but at the hotel, I saw Dave Willock, who used to be Jack Carson's partner.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And Dave is in town now for a few days.
Oh, I'll have to grab him, too.
Yeah, he's going to go to Minneapolis to do a commercial there.
Uh-huh.
Great. And talking about commercials, I have that kind of a company in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's called Mel Blanc Audio Media.
Mel Blanc Audio Media.
Yeah, which my son is president.
Uh-huh.
And we do humorous commercial campaigns for many big companies.
Uh-huh. And for radio, TV?
Radio, mostly.
Mostly
radio. We're so
radio.
Busy with radio, we don't have a chance to do TV.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear you're involved with radio, because that's our thing, too, these days.
We also have a syndicated, various types of syndication that are coming out now. One that's been out for some time is called Superfun.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a series for disc jockeys. It's a programming service for disc jockeys with little humorous bits and
little different cuts on a.
It's about 1,800 of them.
Wow.
Had 50 riders working on them.
No kidding. Excuse me. Did you, a disc jockey then who would want to add some great interest in his program might get in touch with Mel
Blanc
Productions and utilize something like that.
That's right.
Good. Well, we'll be listening for it. We'll see where
okay.
we can find them. Maybe we'll see if we can use it for that.
Good.
There was a program called Major Hoople.
Oh,
and there was a man by the name of Arthur Q. Bryan, who was with Fibber McGee and Molly for many years. And
yes.
He did a lot of voices. Can you recall that?
Yes, sure. Arthur Q. Bryan also did the voice for Elmer Fudd in the Warner Brother cartoons.
Ah, yeah.
And he passed away about 12 years ago. And as I say, the only person I will imitate or... try to do is someone who was passed away years ago, and I am called on now to do maybe a line or two for Elmer.
Mm-hmm.
But it was his property, and he was quite a nice fellow.
Well, when you fellas would work together in a cartoon like that,
yeah.
would you be doing it simultaneously, or would they record the different voices separately?
Well, in instances like that, we would work together.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do voices individually, like Porky and Daffy and these others, they are done separately, and then they are pieced together on the tape. So they sound like they are in continuity.
Rather than
form.
Making you change your voice,
yes,
from one
right.
to the next. But you must have done that from time to
time.
Oh,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Is it tough?
Well, it's pretty tough, Doc.
And sometimes it's not so hard. But I keep on talking.
How many voices do you have?
Well, about 10 or 11 years ago, I sat down and tried to figure out how many voices I could do. By the time I got to 400, I was sound asleep.
No
12
kidding.
O'clock at midnight, yeah.
400.
And that was 11 years ago, and I've done many since then. So
you're creating new voices all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
As a commercial would demand, or as a character
yes.
in a film would command, or a radio or a TV thing, I suppose.
That's right, or a new animation.
Uh-huh.
Like there's a new program, a television program coming out called Curiosity Shop on ABC. It's come out in September, and we're doing that now. We're making a series for that.
What voice are we going to hear on
well,
that?
Well, I will be a bloodhound and
a laughing hyena who laughs oh very much.
And, that laughing hyena sounds a lot like a postman I used to hear on the Burns and Allen
That's right,
program.
It was. That's
what did he used to say?
Goodbye, Mrs. Burns. Remember, keep smiling.
I want to ask about a series of your own on radio. You had a program called Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop.
That's right.
And when was that on?
1946 and 47.
Mm-hmm. And this was it came out of Hollywood?
Yeah, CBS. It was for Colgate Palmolive Pete.
What was the... how long did that run? A year? 2 years?
2 years.
2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was right in the heart of radio's biggest era, I think.
That's right.
The middle 40s is when... when
mm-hmm.
radio was at its finest.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a lot of guests on the program?
Oh, yeah. Hans Conried and Jim Backus.
Uh-huh. My goodness. Mel Blanc, Hans Conried, and Jim Backus. Did anybody ever... You didn't need anybody else, did you?
Oh, I had some great gals, too. All of the top gals in the business.
Wow.
Can't think of their names individually.
Mel Blanc, I can't tell you how
Lee
much.
Lee Benaderet was one.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's on.
She died.
She was on the... wasn't she working on the Flintstones for a while? Lee
yes.
Benaderet?
Yes,
yeah.
That's
and
right.
She was with Burns and Allen on
yes,
television,
uh-huh.
I think. And what was the...
Hillbilly
thing. Was it the Beverly Hillbillies or was
she
it...
She was with the Beverly Hillbillies to start with, and then yeah. she went on her own show.
Yeah.
Which was...
Petticoat
Junction.
Right,
yeah.
right. Mel, I can't thank you enough for... spending some time with us today and sharing your talents and reminiscing a little bit on those were the days. Before you go, can we ask you to sign us off? As I guess you probably, I don't think you can leave a room without saying goodbye the way Porky Pig would sign off at the end of one of those beautiful Warner Brothers cartoons.
Okay, Chuck, I'll be glad to. Ear, that's all, folks.
Mel Blanc, the great Mel Blanc. Speaking of radio, back on April 26th of 1971, when we had a chance to visit with him when he was in Chicago for the Kennedy and Company TV show on Channel 7. I have to tell you, one of the great moments of my life was during this conversation when I had the chance to do the CSI routine with the man himself, with Mel Blanc. A real nice man. He was 63 years old at the time of our conversation. He died in 1989 at the age of 81, and he had a tremendous career, and he did so much work, so much in the movies, and so much in radio, and he was a great spark in all of those radio programs.